Let's go.
The Criminal Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee will come to order. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Byrd.
Here.
Vice Chair Brannon.
Here.
Ranking Member Grieco.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby. Busada Cabrera. Bush.
Here.
Chambliss. Fetterhoff.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Haig.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Snyder.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence their electronic devices. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. When the presenter is having a colloquy with the members, y'all don't have to go through the chair. You can just have a conversation as long as you remain civil. You're fine. I'm watching you. So it's good afternoon, everybody. It's good to see everybody again. Today we will be considering seven bills, and the first we are going to take up is Representative Fine with PCS for HB 1189 Sexual Assault Response Teams. Chairman Fine, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I had a whole uncivil opening planned. Now I unfortunately have to change this. Actually, I am here to talk about a very serious subject, and that is the crime of rape. One in six women in the state of Florida have been or will be raped in their lives. Yet despite that, only one in three ever feels the ability to go forward and make that claim to law enforcement. My bill is intended to help resolve that. HB 1189 will make a number of changes to the sexual assault response team statute that we have and will do four things. First, it will require each county's health department to participate in a sexual assault response team, should one exist. And second, in those counties that do not have one, it will allow a certified rape crisis center to create them. So we'd like to have one of those in every county. Third, it will require the SART to make a number of changes. They have to meet quarterly. They have to have a written protocol for how they will respond to a sexual assault to make sure people know exactly what to do. And then it will promote this and support the use of sexual assault forensic examiners who have received a minimum of 40 hours of training in how to deal with these issues. Lastly, the bill states who must be on a sexual assault response team, including, for example, the state attorney and the sheriff. And that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the explanation. Are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill. All right. Seeing Bush shaking his head. There are no questions on the bill. Are there amendments? There are no amendments. Public testimony. Let's see. We have Rebecca McKenzie, Gainesville Police Department, as a proponent. And Katrina Dusterhaus, representing herself, is also a proponent. Oh. No, the other one. Is that Ms. McKenzie or Officer McKenzie? Are you Officer McKenzie? Yes, okay, so we called your name, but if you want to, did you want to say anything or? Yes, please come to the podium and give us your statement. Thank you.
Do I need to? Good afternoon. My name is Rebecca McKenzie. I'm a lieutenant with the Gainesville Police Department in Gainesville, Florida. I've been an officer with the Gainesville Police Department since January of 2004. I'm currently a patrol shift commander, but I've spent a large part of my career assigned to investigations. Additionally, I am an adjunct instructor for Santa Fe College Institute for Public Safety, which is our local police academy. I work as a consultant and trainer for the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence, and I'm also honored to be a member of the End Violence Against Women International Cadre of Experts. I've presented throughout the state on topics related to trauma-informed investigations, adult sexual violence, domestic violence, and child sexual exploitation. As a police officer, I was not always trauma-informed. My journey began in November of 2013. During that time, I transferred to our detective division as the sergeant in charge of our sex crime squad. As I acclimated to my new position, I made a worrisome observation. Many of the survivors of sexual violence who had the courage to come forward and initially report to our agency became disengaged during the investigation and were either reluctant to continue or completely refused further participation when our detectives reached out to them. I knew that the Gainesville Police Department was committed to holding offenders accountable and we pride ourselves on constantly evolving and improving for the benefit of our community. But it was this thought that I realized that we needed to do something different with our approach, and I started researching. During my research, I came across a trauma-informed sexual assault class that was hosted and given by the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence. I attended this course, and it shifted my entire perspective. I immediately began to change the way our squad conducted investigations and interacted with survivors. It also showed me that not only did our entire agency need to be trauma-informed, but our entire community. I learned that the neurobiology of trauma affects memory, recall, and victim behavior, and that many of the signs of deception that I was taught and many officers were taught early in our careers are actually indicators of trauma. Understanding the signs of trauma is imperative so that our officers respond appropriately. Additionally, during this training, officers are taught the importance of the first interaction with a survivor. The initial interaction usually sets the tone, and if the officer does not respond with empathy and with an attempt to build a caring connection, a survivor may not feel supported enough to continue with the investigation. After introducing and implementing this training, our relationship with our partner agencies improved, but more importantly, our ability to serve the survivors in our community improved. I can only imagine how difficult it must be to report sexual violence to a stranger. The amount of courage it must take for a survivor to pick up the phone, walk into a hospital, or into a law enforcement agency and ask for help. Regardless of how a survivor reaches out, when they reach out, where they reach out, or to whom they reach out, the response should always be the same: trauma-informed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Officer McKenzie, and for your service to the citizens of Gainesville. We appreciate you being here. All right, seeing no other public testimony, members... Okay. So, Ms. Doosterhouse? Yes? Okay, yes. You're recognized.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman Byrd, Vice Chairman Brennan, Ranking Member Grieco, and members of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Katrina Doosterhouse. I'm a resident and small business owner in Martin County, Florida, and I am an empowered survivor of sexual assault. In 2018, I joined the sexual assault response team of Martin County, Palm Beach County, and St. Lucie County because I recognize these multidisciplinary teams are crucial to improving a community's response to sexual violence. Through these teams, I've had the privilege of working with some outstanding law enforcement officials. I've met detectives on their day off who come in to discuss cases with victim advocates, agency captains and FBI officials participating in strategic planning and the development of response protocols, and officers at every level receiving trauma-informed investigation training. In the three counties that I volunteer, I see so much hope for survivors, not only in the way these law enforcement officials care so much, but in their well-educated responses to sexual assault and the uniform protocols that guide their investigations. Sadly, though, not all victims are met with such excellence. I know because I've experienced both sides of this issue. I was raped when I was 14 years old at a party I had gone to with two of my girlfriends. At some point during the night, I was sitting in a bedroom surrounded by a group of five older guys. They were 18 and 19 years old. My friends were out in the living room with some other partygoers, so I was alone with them, and these guys began discussing who gets to go first. I didn't understand what they meant by that or what it meant when they began arguing over who would get sloppy seconds. And I still didn't understand what was going on when all of them left the room except for one of them. It was only then, when he dropped his pants and came at me to tear off my clothing, that I finally realized they meant to rape me. I remember clawing at the back of the first rapist, but at some point I just gave up. Even if I had managed to get the first one off of me, who was much bigger and stronger than I was at 14, there were four of his friends waiting just outside the door. Any actual escape seemed impossible to me, so I did the best I could at the time. My mind disassociated from my body, and I zoned out to become a spot on the ceiling. I remained dissociated for much of these assaults, and so there are gaps in my memory. Some of what I do remember, though, is the first rapist warned his friend on the way in, "Watch out, she's a scratcher." And the one named Taylor, he's the most difficult to forget. I remember snapping back into my body to see him laughing with his hand around my throat and his other fingers plugging my nose, depriving me of air. Taylor wanted me to open my mouth so he could rape me there, too. It took me 4 years to report this assault, and unfortunately, that experience was also traumatic for me. I felt like the officers I reported to didn't believe me. I felt like they didn't even want to take my report. I felt even less safe than before I had tried to report the five men who conspired together to rape a 14-year-old girl. Across our state, the responses a victim can receive in reporting sexual assault will vary depending on where they report the crime. Florida does not have statewide sexual assault protocols, and this needs to change. Victims deserve the best possible response in reporting crimes, and rape is one that often leaves us feeling full of shame, in addition to being traumatized and feeling very unsafe. When I went to the police to report being assaulted, that was me asking for help. And what I needed was to first and foremost feel believed by the officers I reported to. I also needed to be validated in some way, to hear that what these perpetrators did to me was not acceptable in our society, and that it wasn't my fault. What I needed most was to feel safe again, and that the public safety officials I had turned to cared about me and my safety and wanted to help me. That's what I wanted. Sadly, I did not get that response from law enforcement, but I know we can do better. I've seen both possible outcomes, the ones that leave victims better equipped to deal with the aftermath of sexual violence, as well as the ones that leave us even more traumatized than prior to reporting such intimate and violent crimes. I know the difference this bill can make for future survivors of rape in Florida. Please support this legislation and vote yes today so that together we can ensure all victims of sexual assault seeking help in our great state receive the best possible care. Thank you for seeing and hearing me today.
Thank you for being here and for your support for the legislation. We appreciate it. Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony, members, we are in debate. Anyone in debate? All right, seeing no debate, Representative Fine, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Well, thank you, members. I don't think I could close with a more compelling argument than our previous speakers. I did want to say this. I am not a lawyer, and while I sometimes have to play one on TV, this is a world that's completely outside of my experience. I've never presented a criminal-related bill in my 5 years in the legislature. I came to this journey because a woman, Deidre Logan, came to me and recounted her story, which is as horrifying as the one that we heard. There's a special place in hell for men who do this sort of thing, and the stories that I hear hopefully make you as sick as they make me. There's no higher duty than we have here in the legislature than to protect victims from this sort of conduct. I do want to give a special thanks, though, to someone who does play a lawyer, not only on TV, but in real life, our chair, Chair Byrd, who, without whom we could not have gotten the bill to the point that it would have been presented today. And I'm very grateful to him and his staff for making that happen, as well as Tracy Davis, our colleague, who is my prime co-sponsor on this bill and is in another committee right now. Otherwise, she would be here as well. She is my partner in this, and this is unquestionably as bipartisan a bill as you will find in this process. And with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Fine. And having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on the PCS for HB 1189 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Congratulations. Show PCS for HB 1189 reported favorably.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Next, we are going to go to House Bill 6095, Scheduling of Drug Products Containing Cannabidiol by Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Byrd and committee members. House Bill 6095, Scheduling Drug Products Containing Cannabidiol, is a bill. It is simply a repealer bill. It's dealing with specifically an FDA-approved pharmaceutical product called Epidiolex. Epidiolex is an FDA-approved pharmaceutical product primarily used to treat juvenile seizures. This drug is available as a Schedule 5 pharmaceutical product under the Controlled Substance Act since 2019, and was approved by the legislature in 2019 as well. As a result of the passage of the Agriculture Improvement Act, also known as the Farming Bill, Epidiolex is now meets a new federal definition of hemp as a product that contains less than 0.3% THC. Following the passage of the Farm Bill, the DEA found that Epidiolex no longer is a controlled substance and subject to the Controlled Substance Act, and the drug was formally removed by an interim rule on August 10th of 2020. Members, as you know, the Florida legislature must annually review updates to the federal CSA and introduce legislation that brings parity between Florida law and federal law. This bill simply removes Epidiolex from the CSA, allowing Florida to join 45 other states that already have enacted similar legislation or rules addressing Epidiolex. That is the bill.
Thank you for the explanation. Members, are we hearing questions? Questions on the bill? All right, seeing none, there are no amendments, public testimony. Melissa Villar, Normal, Tallahassee. Ms. Villar, you're recognized.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Melissa Villar with Normal, Tallahassee, and I just would like to bring up the point that cannabis is Florida, the Florida statutes excludes medical marijuana, industrial hemp, Epidiolex. We need to have uniformity in the state. Right now, depending on your location in the state, some judicial circuits do not prosecute for cannabis possession. Some do not, some you receive civil fines, and some law enforcement, they choose at the discretion not to give a ticket or arrest for cannabis possession. So we ask that the exclusion be added for personal possession of cannabis as well. Right now, and the recommendation is anywhere from 20 grams to up to 2 ounces per the medical marijuana possession amounts. So we did want to bring that forward and that recommendation so we may have uniformity throughout the state for cannabis possession enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. Any debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Fisher, recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just say that sometimes the debate around marijuana or cannabis tends to get controversial. This bill has been, it's passed unanimously in previous committees, and I ask for your favorable support today and hope that we can pass this in a bipartisan way. Thank you.
Representative Fisher, having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 6095 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Usada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please show House Bill 6095 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look forward to seeing you upstairs soon.
All right. Next, we are going to go to House Bill 1405, Care for Retired Law Enforcement Dogs by Representative Killebrew. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. HB 1405 creates a Care for Retired Law Enforcement Dogs program, which provides a stable funding source for handlers or adopters of retired law enforcement dogs for their veterinary service. These dogs are often exposed to grave danger, injury, and this program will provide for their much needed care after their service to our state and the law enforcement. It will provide up to $1,500 of annual veterinary cost each year that be applied for to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. The bill also includes includes an appropriation of $300,000 in reoccurring general revenue funds for implementing and administering this. So anybody that's ever seen police dogs just training alone looks pretty tough. And, you know, I kind of equate this to a professional football player, and he plays 10 or 12 years, and then he's beat up. Well, these dogs are pretty well beat up when they retire. But this will be some help to the handlers and the people who might adopt them, and that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions for the bill sponsor? No. All right. Public testimony. We have Kate McFall, Humane Society of the United States. Humane Society waving in support. Thank you. All right. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Anyone debating? No? All right. Representative Killebrew, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Thank you. Representative Killebrew, having closed on the PCS, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1405 and announce the vote. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Hague?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams? Yes. Chair Bird?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Show House Bill 1405 reported favorably.
Chair, thank you. Upstairs. Thank you, members.
All right, next up, we have House Bill 1199, Photographic Enforcement of School Bus Safety, by Representative Altman. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This addresses a serious issue. In 2019, the Department of Education did a statewide survey regarding the illegal passing of school buses. In just one day, over 12,000 illegal passes occurred on 10,136 school buses. We know that nationally in the last 9 years, we've lost nearly 250 children due to crashes related to school buses. House Bill 199 authorizes but does not require a school bus to install, operate a side signal arm enforcement system to enforce violations for failing to stop for a school bus displaying a stop signal. Under the bill, a side stop signal arm enforcement system, or an enforcement system, means a camera system affixed to a school bus with two or more camera sensors or computers that produce recorded videos of two or more film or digital photographic still images used to document motor vehicles failing to stop for a school bus displaying a stop signal. Under the bill, a school district may contract with a private vendor to provide the installation, operation, and maintenance of the enforcement system. The bill requires a private vendor to notify any law enforcement agency authorized to enforce school bus stop arm violations or any violation captured by the enforcement system within 30 days after the violation is captured, and to submit the following information regarding the alleged violation: a copy of the recorded image showing the vehicle, they need a vehicle license tag number and a state of issuance, and the date, time, and place of the alleged violation. And that's 1199, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative, for the explanation. Questions on the bill? Any questions? All right, seeing no questions, public testimony? There's no public testimony. Debate on the bill. Debate on school bus safety. All right, cold room today. Cold room, wow. All right, Representative Altman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I waive close, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Altman, having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1199 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Hague?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Tuck.
Yes.
Williams.
Yes.
Chair Byrd.
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Congrats, show House Bill 1199 reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
All right. In a similar vein, protecting students in school and in school zones, we're going to go to House Bill 357, Photographic Enforcement of School Zone Speed Limits, by Representative Duran. Representative Duran, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, committee members. As the chair has said, this is a bill that continues down the path of ensuring the safety of our students. Particularly, this is focused in on school safety zones, and what this bill will do would allow, but not require, a municipality or a to install a school safety, a traffic system within a school safety zone that would photograph those who would be violating that school safety zone speed limit by over 10 miles an hour. It provides a penalty and a distribution specific to how that penalty be distributed to and for school safety initiatives and school safety and safety in general, as well as provides a process within which you can appeal the violation as well. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the explanation. Questions for the bill sponsor? Questions? Yes, Representative Snyder, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Duran, for the bill. I've enjoyed talking with you about this. One of the main areas that I can't find the clarity either in the bill or the bill analysis is I see where it talks about that a school zone or a school zone speed limit may be enforced 30 minutes before, during, and 30 minutes after. I know that in my county or counties, typically there's a yellow light flashing when that speed zone is enforced, and typically the way I see it, it's 30 minutes before and 30 minutes after. Does this still leave the discretion at the local, within local governments, to set the time parameters of that yellow light? And will the camera be able to pick this up? And really, to get to the question, yeah, is I've heard that that this would allow for that monitoring to happen during the entire school day. Can you just help me clarify that a little bit, please?
Through the chair, and thank you for the question. And it's a great question. I think I've heard this from another member as well. So as you said it, that the parameters of in which the lights can be signaled and flashing and that enforcement of the school safety zone, the speed limits, whether it's reduced speed limit, that is set in statute. We're not changing what that looks like at all. Now, as it's written, as you said, it would allow for enforcement during the day of during the school day, but that doesn't mean that it would be at the reduced speed limit of that school zone as it's drafted. And I mentioned too like that because we have been working through on a draft to clarify this language as well.
Yep.
And so just to clarify, so the camera would be enforcing not only the reduced speed in the morning and in the afternoon, it would also be enforcing the speed throughout the entire school day at that normal level.
Through the chair, and thank you. As drafted right now, that is correct. During a school day, not throughout the entire weekend. It is during that school when the school is in.
That's what it'll do. Okay, members, any other questions? Yes, Representative Maine is recognized for a question.
Well, thanks for talking with me about this bill yesterday. I appreciate it. One thing I didn't know at the time we discussed was that violations would be heard. Contested violations would be heard by an administrative hearing officer. Is that correct?
Through the chair, correct. It would be in the same sort of way that you can contest any other non-moving traffic violation. It is drafted in that way.
Mr. Chairman, may I follow up?
Follow up.
Aren't most of those kind of violations heard by a county court judge that's elected by the people, instead of an administrative hearing officer?
Through the chair, and thank you for the question. I may be incorrect. Let me. I will double check and chair. I do believe it is a court. You will be going to court and be able to verify it there within court.
Thank you, right, Mr. Chairman.
I,
yeah.
I have to run to present another bill. They have recessed and they are waiting for me, so I am going to pass the gavel to the vice chair to most likely close out the meeting. So, Vice Chair Brandon, you are in charge. Thank you all.
Yes, sir, if I may follow up. Is there another stop on this bill?
Through the chair, yes. And this is an issue that we've been clarifying. I think one of the things that we're working through is an appeal process that allows somebody who may not be the owner, but the owner may be getting the violation. However, it may be someone else who is in care and control of that vehicle. And so what we're trying to do is work through what that process looks like to ensure that that individual has an ability to be heard and to express through an affidavit and other evidence.
Yeah, I would just say that I've sat on thousands of those kinds of cases in county court, and there frequently are disputes as to who was driving the car. My teenage son was home from college. My brother was visiting from Baltimore or whatever. And I really think we need to make sure who's gonna hear the hearings or appeals. I'll be up for it today, Mr. Chairman, but that's a soft up.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we have one amendment, amendment barcode 161171.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to withdraw this amendment because we are still working. I was working with staff. Whitney and I had discussed this earlier today. We have a few things that we need to clarify, so I'm going to withdraw that amendment for now.
So amendment barcode 161171 withdrawn. We now move into public testimony. Danny McMillan, Florida PTA, is a proponent of the bill. Oh, is she here? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Looking down and not up. And then we have Jennifer Pritt, Florida Police Chiefs Association. Waves in support. No other further public testimony. We'll now move into debate. Anybody in debate? Seeing none, Representative Duran, you're recognized to close on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill. Again, this goes in the focus of ensuring the safety of our children. I do believe speed is the old saying, speed kills, is something we need to continue, because the faster a car is moving, the longer it takes to stop and the farther it travels, but also the increased likelihood of the person getting injured increases substantially. This goes towards that and helps us provide a mechanism to ensure that safety for our students and families crossing streets going to school. I humbly wish for your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Duran. Having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 357 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Busada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo? Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Bird? 16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
So HB 357 reported favorably. Thank you. Next bill for consideration today is HB 807, Detention of Children. Representative Byrd said we had a cold room, so I'm going to call on the man to warm it up, Representative Bush. Yes, sir. You're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Ranking Member Griso and to the members of this committee. Thank you for allowing me to present House Bill 807, Detention of Our Children. What I did is try to extrapolate from the present statutes what is the current law and what we need to do to make sure that for the juvenile justice system that we come in compliance so that we can receive the federal grants funding by 2021 in December. So let me just lay out the foundation of what I think this bill does in terms of what we need to do. Let me start with a foundational premise, and that is the background. The Federal Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act establishes four core protections all states must comply with by December 2021 to be eligible for federal juvenile justice grant funds. Now, the current law, Florida currently requires the court to order a juvenile be transferred to an adult jail or other adult facility when he or she has been transferred or indicted as an adult for a felony offense or is wanted by another jurisdiction for prosecution as an adult. I'm going to have to take this off. Now, essentially what now what this bill does, the changes, essentially what it does is House Bill 807 brings Florida juvenile detention care provisions into compliance with the Act. New core protections, which I stated, requires a hearing and written findings before a juvenile charge as an adult can be held in an adult facility. Also, it requires a court to find that a transfer to an adult facility is in the interest of justice for considering the juvenile age, physical, mental maturity, present mental state, and prior delinquency. Also, the nature and circumstances of the charges, the ability and the available adult and juvenile facilities to meet the child's needs, protect the public, and protect other detained juveniles and any other relevant factors. Lastly, requires a hearing every 30 days or 45 days in rural jurisdictions to review if holding the juvenile in an adult facility is still in the interest of justice, unless a court makes written findings a good cause or a juvenile waives the limit, a juvenile may not be held in an adult facility longer than 180 days. Basically, what this is, this bill tries to do is just separate adults from the children. And that is the essence of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions on the bill? Questions? Representative Learned?
I just have one question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And it pertains to the price tag on this. I saw in the estimate it was, I believe, $37 million. Is it? Did we already get the appropriation for that, or is that happening simultaneously? I just wanted an update on where we are in that process. Thank you.
We're working on it. It is a price tag.
Any other questions? Seeing no more questions, are there any amendments? Does it look like it? No. Now in the public testimony. We have Danny McMillan, Florida PTA. Thank you, ma'am. Nancy Daniels, Florida Public Defenders Association. Their proponent of the bill. Ingrid Delgado, Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. Their proponent. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy. Also a proponent. Carrie Boyd, SPLC Action Fund, waves in support. Seeing no more public testimony, we now move into debate. Anyone in debate? Nobody's in debate. Oh, Representative Barnaby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to stand in support of this very good bill. Thank you, Representative Bush. It's very similar to the bill that I'm doing right there on juvenile justice. And I commend you for this, sir. And I'm proud to stand with you. Thank you so
much. Seeing nobody else in debate, Representative Bush, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Well, I have a 15 minutes presentation. Because I worked, and normally I just give one line, but because I've worked over the years for the last 35 years with juveniles, and I know the very need of our juveniles being nurtured. They are speaking a certain language to us. Back 35 years ago, should I say that long, I worked in the juvenile justice system as a teacher at Youth Hall. And I had the opportunity to speak with many of those young people and try to get into their heads to see just where they were in terms of why they was in there for, you know, gun charges and doing a whole lot of other things that was not becoming of young people. I say this, say all that to say this, that our juveniles, our young people are speaking a language to us today. Back then, it was very hard. It was very difficult for them. But today, they're speaking a very dangerous language. So much so to the point where they are now willing to pick up weapons of human mass destruction and drive by little children birthday parties and spray the party up and kill little babies who just out playing and having fun with their birthday. They are willing to take AK-47s now. This is a reality. And spray up communities, and that's happening as I speak. And I'll leave you with this. For the last 25 years, I have been dealing with juveniles and preaching funerals. Just the last 6 months, I just committed to the ground a little six-year-old beautiful little baby who was at a birthday party and got caught in the crossfire with an AK-47, and we committed her body to the ground. And it's very difficult when you are trying to console mothers and fathers and little family members and brothers and sisters and cousins of their loved ones being taken out by young people or another juvenile. So I say all that to say this. We are living in a time now where they are speaking a language. We're either going to address the issue or we're going to continue to get the same type of results. And with that being said, I just need you to help me give these juveniles a blessing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Representative Bush, having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 807 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Quesada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd? 17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 807 reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Final bill for consideration today is PCS for HB 69, Parole Eligibility, by Representative Hart. Representative Hart, you are recognized to present the PCS.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Good afternoon, Vice Chair Brannon and Ranking Member Grieco and all the other esteemed committee members. It is a pleasure to stand before you today to present PSC for HB 69. This is known as the Parole Eligibility Bill. This is an issue that I've been working on since 2018, and I'm very happy to at least have gotten it to this committee this year. The purpose of the bill is to create requirements for parole eligibility. Currently, there is no parole system here in the state of Florida. It was eliminated in 1984. Currently, the Florida Commission on Offender Review and the Florida Department of Corrections, they have no parameters which qualifies an individual for parole. A parole hearing examiner does come to the facility to facilitate, you know, trying to figure out if you're eligible. But the bill basically says, as it relates to parole eligibility, revising legislative intent concerning the granting of parole, creating requirements for the Florida Commission on Offender Review and the Department of Corrections to jointly develop a voluntary long-term inmate program, requiring the program to be offered to male and female inmates equally. That's the basics of the bill, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hart. Are there any questions? on the PCS. Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Hart. Just wondering if you could walk the committee through the process for an individual to get the opportunity to go before the commission on offender review.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Good question. A parole hearing examination officer will go to the facility and they'll do a review of that inmate's record while they've been detained in our correctional facilities. They will determine whether or not they believe that individual should be eligible to go up before the Florida Commission on Offender Review. And that's based on how many DRs, those are disciplinary reports, how many programs that person may have completed, their behavior while they've been incarcerated, whether or not they've had any problems with the staff, that's all recorded. Then that information is given to the Commission on Offender Review. The commission meets. The individual does not get to go physically before the commission. The report is sent ahead of the individual. And then they allow either the victim themselves, who the crime may have occurred to, or the victim's family to come in. Well, typically it's been on the phone since we've had the virus. Prior to that, you physically could go before that commission and speak. And then they make a ruling as to whether or not they believe that person has been rehabilitated and deserve a second chance or not. And that's basically how that process works. And then they say yes or no. Or they say, I need you to go back to prison, bring me X number of programs, and then we will see you in 7 years. And that's the reason why I brought the bill, because I just believe that we should have parameters. We should have a program set. There are a number of programs that we believe should be required that's currently, they just say programs, but they don't tell you what.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
Representative Barnaby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hart, I'm a firm believer in restorative justice. You stated that in 1984, the parole process was eliminated in the state of Florida. Can you tell us why?
Well, it used to be our cabinet, and I'm not exactly sure why they decided they did not want to continue parole. They just handed it over to the Florida Commission on Offender Review, which is like a parole commission. However, it's only three people. Before, it used to be five individuals, so now it's three.
Any other questions? Seeing none, are there any amendments? No. We'll now move into public testimony. We have Karen Roberts, who is a proponent of the bill. Laurette Phillipson, proponent. John McMichael, proponent of the bill. Rebecca McMichael, also a proponent. Malik Moore, Director of Political Affairs for Florida College Democrats, a proponent. Ida Escamani, Florida Immigrant Coalition, is in support. Ida Escamani is also with Florida Rising, and again, she is in support. Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches, is in support. Gregory Newburn, Families Against Mandatory Minimums, is in support. Kerry Boyd, SPLC Action Fund, is also in support. No more public testimony. We'll now move into debate. Anybody in debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Hart, you are recognized to close on your PCS.
Thank you all so much. It is indeed pure pleasure to stand before you all to present this bill today. I realize that we must provide second chances. Many of you all know what it looks like in our current Department of Corrections. We're overcrowded. We're releasing about 10 to 15 people a year on parole. And we've just got to do a better job at ensuring that if you earned it, then you get that opportunity. If you did not, then you don't. So I thank you all for hearing the bill today. I ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hart, having closed on the PCS, Lindsay, please call the roll on PCS for HB 69 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Busada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd, 17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show PCS for HB 69 reported favorably. I don't see anything else on the agenda. Members, if there is no further business, that will conclude our agenda. And Representative, I'm going to call him Rizzo because he's going to move we rise instead of Rizzo. Rizzo. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.